Pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang, and due to popular demand, I am a dumbass.
Yeah. Peer pressure. Peer pressure.
Due to peer pressure, I suppose, is also a good way to put it. But I would say popular demand. I think there's enough people out there who are more than happy to call me a dumbass, and I'm fine with that. I think I can live with myself.
You know, it's all about having set roles. I'm a jackass. I get that. I'm totally okay with it.
Jackass, dumbass, smartass. I think any one of those works at various percentages. Like, I think a pie graph of those various ass traits would be very good. But yes, my name is Lang. I am drinking scotch. And as you can tell, I brought the bottle down because with us today is John. Mr. John, the Boriental Wong, the prodigy. I think you're the only one with an actual name who comes on the show who I'm willing to actually give a name to. But he brought me a bottle of scotch, just much as he did with the don't shift the cup of Mike. Okay?
I'm trying not to.
He brought me a bottle of scotch, much as he did with Out of the Basement, so I'm going to drink it. It's a Sunday, and I work tomorrow again. And Nathan, what are you drinking today, my friend?
I have a unpronounceable Belgian beer. I've no idea. There's
too many. Does it have iced tea in it?
No, because I'm not an idiot. Like I said with the live blog, dudes, just text me. Like I can suggest.
Oh no, this wasn't. Hey, I wonder if it's good. That would be hilarious. Because we also had a bottle of champagne, and we also had more liquor to go with it that we drank.
Hypnotic.
Actually, I told him fuck Hypnotic. Ooh, we got only slightly less, what's the word? Fancy? Would be, we got ourselves a jug of cranberry juice and amaretto. Because we love our cran and amaretto. Although I could drink like an entire bottle of amaretto and it will do nothing to me.
Not anymore, really.
No, really. Like amaretto is what, like 20%? That's for bitches.
Well, yeah, we have been training for 74 episodes. Oh, yeah.
That's
now.
Why Brian doesn't stand a chance at Warhammer. I mean, the guy, good on him, you know. It's good for him. You know, it's like Nick Diaz when they're saying you know, he's going to fight George St. Pierre. You're just like, "Ah, good for Nick Diaz. Good for him." But anyways,
need facial reconstruction.
Yeah, why the hell not, right?
Have you seen the Diazes? They need that when they're not fighting.
Well, he had a crybaby moment and quit after his last fight. So we all know he was never going to quit for real, but it was funny just to listen to be like, no, fuck that. No, that's how you want to judge fights, by how many times he punches me. I quit. I'm Rick Diaz. All right. So let's talk about what we did this week in hobby. John and I are going to have a game. It's his Tomb Kings, his newly finished Tomb Kings versus my Lizard Men, and we're playing at 2,500 points, so we actually rolled up Battle for the Pass, so we're playing Longwise again.
I know.
Second tie in a row.
Yeah.
And I crammed him. I used strategically placed terrain, because we rolled up 9 pieces of terrain.
Oh, and on Battle for
the I strategically placed the terrain to create a bottleneck where his gigantic unit of chariots will be hard-pressed to get through. So
I was like placing buildings in the corners.
Oh, yeah, there's a building in the corner.
It's just going to sit there for the whole game.
And, like, I would put a building down, and he would, like, put a building beside it. Because he's like, yeah, you know, it could be bigger. I just don't want it in the way. And then, of course, I won the roll to see which side we get to go on. And I threw him on the side where he had to jam everything in.
Yeah, I put a big river in the one corner.
You put the river in the one corner.
Yeah, but I was hoping I would win the roll so I could go on the other side, and then I was like, fuck.
But yeah, we're all lined up. We're ready to go. We're going to have a game after this is done. Other than that, I've done a little bit of Firestorm this week and was just kind of trying to get models together and finish up my list. I've got a box back there. But what about you, John? I know you've been a whirlwind. It's been a whirlwind of blood.
Well, I just finished up a commissioned army for a guy, and I had to do it 3 weeks earlier than I expected to deliver it. So I'll just say what I painted this week. Tactical squad, 10. Assault squad of 10. A ball predator, rhino, 5 sanguinary guard, a thunder wolf calf, and 10 wolves. And some Malifaux.
And some Malifaux.
Yeah.
Malifaux.
Yeah. I don't even know how to pronounce it.
And that's a turnoff to a game. Oh, man, have you guys heard about that new game? Quilatrolos. Yeah, other than that, for the most part, it's just kind of been gaming and doing family stuff this week. I had my dad in town, so it was just a lot of, you know, less hobby and kind of more family time. What about you, Nathan?
I got a little more painting done up on my Lord of Change, but really, I've had the flu. Like, you know, the Saturday when you recorded, I was taking care of my daughter with the flu, and then from Sunday through Thursday, I never left the house and rarely moved beyond my computer to actually do some painting. So,
you know, Sage was like level 43.
Yes, I'm actually going to hit 44 tonight when we're done, I think.
Sick to work, not sick enough to not play video games.
Well, that's the way it works, right?
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Come on.
I'm sick.
I mean, I'm so close to
50. I do, but I'm Asian, so I'll do it.
You could catch up quickly. I think I'm 37 right now, but whatever.
See, John doesn't hire bots. John hires himself.
Yes. Hey, they don't count as hiring bots if you give birth to them and then train them to play for you.
I saw something online.
You mean the like you and your space missions?
We just don't want to pay so much for shit we already made.
Oh.
Nice.
Funny.
But yeah, you know, like I said, that's it for me. Other than that, I had one game of Warhammer with my Adepticon list. We rolled up a Watchtower scenario. I was playing it pretty well, ended up losing it at the end because he still had six guys camped out in the Watchtower on turn four when he rolled the Miracle Six for the game to end.
Ah, Miracle Six.
He needed it because turn five I'd have tabled him.
There you go.
So, you know, I was just like, eh, you know, what can you do when that one in six comes up? I knew that I needed at least five turns to...
Well, if you're 50% of Warhammer players out there, you bitch about it. About how unfair it is.
You know what? That is very true.
Oh my god, you rolled a six. Oh, that's so stupid. It breaks. That's not fun. A six isn't fun.
Yeah, what are the chances?
What are the chances of a six?
Right. No, so like I said, I was very happy. Yeah, what are the chances of a six? Love it.
Anyways.
They've got to be at least like, what, one in
that's
three?
That's like a 1 in 100, man. Come on. Jeez. All right, let's move on to higher learning. This week is ogres for Warhammer Fantasy. Ogre Kingdoms, one of the few army books that we have so far released in 8th edition. I think everyone was very pleased with the way that the Ogre Kingdoms were put together. I think I was definitely pleased with the way that they were put together.
Well, when you look at what it used to be.
Yes. There was nowhere to go but up, which I think is the opposite of the Empire book, which is why so many people are pissed off about Empire right now. I haven't read it yet.
I have, and it's just typical Credace. What does everyone own? They own swordsmen and halberdiers, so let's make sure those are more expensive and spearmen stay at 5 points, because no one bought spearmen. It's typical Robin Credace. Just
save
nerf
it,
the
save
shit
it
out
it
of
for next people. Episode. Save it Listen, for next episode, Nathan.
What, you think that this is all I have? All of the Credace hate I have is that
no,
sentence
no, no.
right there?
I'm oh, aware.
I got tons. I'm that well will never run dry.
Fully aware. But save it for next episode. We will be doing a two-part Empire review for the book that's coming out here. So the first part of the podcast, or I'm sorry, part one will be next week's podcast, and then after that will be part two, and we'll kind of break it down, kind of get into get a little bit deeper into these books. I think one of the problems with doing an hour show is when these books are released, you know, there's a lot of people who want to be involved in the podcast. They want to talk about it. I mean, I have at least two or three people who want to be involved in the Empire book podcast. Not to mention the fact that, you know, in an hour, even when we try to stretch it out to 90 minutes, there's just not enough time to really get into the meat of those books. And at the end of it, there's just no time to sit down and talk about the list building side and the kind of the metagame side. So we are going to start breaking the new Codex or Army Book release episodes into two episodes. So that should be pretty fun. But yeah, let's talk about Ogre Kingdoms here. You were saying that you wanted to start it. You were thinking about starting an Ogre Kingdoms army, and I was trying to dissuade you.
Yeah, you're just like, they're all bad guys. All you have is bad guys. Well, and you're going to be playing the same kind of army.
Well,
get a good guy army.
You've got the armies essentially that I have, right? Like it's, you know, you've got Undead, you've got Chaos.
Don't make my mistakes, Jim.
Oh, it's not anything about making mistakes. It's just... You know, like, I got ogres, I liked them. I got vampires, I liked them. I had my my orcs and goblins, I liked them. I tried doing high elves, couldn't get it going. But it wasn't until I actually did the Lizardmen, and it was a completely different style of playing, that it was just really rejuvenating to kind of get back into a different list. as opposed to just playing kind of the same old stuff. That, and there's just so many Ogre players out there, and you know, I know, like, you do a nice job on your painting. Like, your Tomb Kings look really nice here. I took some pictures. I'll try to remember to post them up on the Facebook group. But, you know, it's like, that army is pretty dry to paint. Like, you can paint it quick.
Ba-dum-dum-tsh.
Hey!
Look, you're going to make a bad pun.
It wasn't even a... John and I are confused as to what was the pun.
We're just like,
you said ba-dum-dum, and we were like, ah!
Tomb Kings are a bit dry. Nothing. No. All right.
Kalita's got a dry vagina because it's undead.
You mean chlamydia?
Yeah. But how's that different from regular women? Am I right? See, every once in a while, Nathan throws out a hey-o, and you just kind of go like, "What was the joke? I don't know what he meant. What was hey-o?
Oh, I did it funny.
Oh yeah, I rock at that one. But no, I mean, it's for ogres. Ogres are a lot of fun, but they're really not all that much different from the hordes and the undead and stuff like that. So if you're already kind of playing those types of lists, you're going to be better off. You're going to have more fun playing a good guy list and kind of playing something a little bit different. I do like my ogres, but I did, you know, anyone who had an ogre list before this re-release is really going to have to go back and rebuild their list. I don't think there's any way around that now. So kind of as we turn this higher learning toward list building and tournaments, I'm going to lead right in with what I had written in some of my blogs there with regards to having your army led at 2,000 and 2,500 by a Slaughtermaster, level 4, but with no real magic items. Just have him kitted out for combat, because there are a lot of great combinations that you can use the Slaughtermaster for that make him essentially a tyrant. And it's a great way to combine having a level 4 on the table with having those combat characters as well. Not to mention the fact, toughness 5, 5 wounds, you know, you can give them regen, you can give them a lot of other stuff. They, even though they said in the FAQ that they fucked up and they weren't supposed to get magic armor, they let you have magic armor with the butchers. I mean, don't think that that's going to be around next time the book comes through, but for now, by all means, use it. You know, they had the option for an iron fist, that means they can take magic armor. You can make them essentially tyrants. So I would say you have to have it led by a Slaughtermaster who has a level 4 that is kitted for combat. If you can fit a tyrant in there, go for it. But otherwise, that's going to be your best choice.
I think
be the best
gut magic.
Gut magic
is going to be the best for you. No,
gut magic hands down. What I was going to say is rather than going, you know, because when you say combat, there's always the option of do you go offensive, do you go defensive. For me, I would take that Slaughtermaster, that 5 wound, toughness 6 Slaughtermaster, who with gut magic can regenerate a wound on a 2+ and just go survival. Because at the end of the day,
Armor of Silvered Steel and a great weapon.
Yeah, and a ward save.
Yeah, absolutely.
And go to fucking town, because at that point you have a guy that's going to be able to shut down and care in challenges, who's continually regenerating wounds. And I think the two biggest things for any ogre army is, one, your general is going to be alive to give his better leadership, or, you know, away, which you need. You're a low leadership army, so you need your general to be alive as long as possible. And so building the defensive sort of build on a Slaughtermaster is definitely going to keep them there all game. And the other thing is you're not giving up 100 victory points for losing your general.
Well, and one of my favorite things, kind of the middle ground with offensive and defensive, is giving him the Fencer's Blades and giving him the Glittering Scales. So then you are at, essentially, you only hit him on 5s or 6s, you know, because he's weapon skill 10 and you're -1 to hit. So, you know, like, that I feel is a great way to kind of keep him alive, but to also get, you know, an extra attack and a high weapon skill, it really does make him that much better. I think you can also get away with giving them the Greedy Fist on that build, which gives him +1 strength, and it also gives him a 6+ ward that eats magic items. So I feel like if you do it that way, he's essentially a super tyrant who is really, really hard to hit with a 6+ save and a 6+ ward save. Like, it's just... Yeah, it's funny, but why not, right?
If Bloodthirsters and Chaos Lords need to hit him on 5s, and he's already toughness 6, and can't you also take a big name to make him toughness 7?
You can make him strength. The big name will give him strength, but I don't know if butchers can take big names.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But even if not, I mean, you know, again, you're right. Glittering Scales with Fencer's Blades is still pretty phenomenal, because, you know, again, even Big Bad Bloodthirster hits him on 5s.
Yeah, so... The other thing about that army, obviously, is you are going to want to have some big blocks of ogres. Whether you just take bulls or you take big units of iron guts, you are definitely going to want to take at least one or two, you know, 15-plus sized units and take advantage of those horde rules. It's going to be really, really good for you, and you're going to appreciate it, you know, kind of sitting in the middle of the board, holding yourself together. Without a doubt, you have to have a BSB. The only reason why I don't like putting glittering or armor of silvered steel on the butcher is because I like putting that on my BSB. Give him a great weapon, give him that, give him the BSB, and let him go to town. But I think one of the big things that I've talked about outside of that that I feel is really, really worthwhile is actually taking a unit of 8 to 10 lead belchers and just have them as one unit, two ranks. They can fire in two ranks. But just the amount of firepower that they put out and the fact that they are still ogres, they do still fight, they do still get a stomp, they're great. If you want to go crazy and put a BSB in with that unit and give them something like the Razor Standard for the additional armor piercing, you can do that as well, and that's also an option. But that does get a little bit tricky when you start thinking about trying to protect your BSB or kind of keep him in position, because he's always going to kind of be out of position if that's what you're doing with your lead belchers.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say is, I mean, lead belchers belong on a flank, you know, because you just want to throw out all those shots to kind of discourage things from coming in and really whittle them down to the point where the lead belchers are going to win, but your BSB really needs to be in the middle. I was going to say that for me, and I know you disagree because you hate them, but I think Retardo Cats, Mournfang Cav, are a must. I think that they're just a little bit fast enough and they hit hard enough that, you can just put them on a flank and rely on them to just make sure that no one's going to be flanking your ogres and starting to play the tic-tac-toe, running through, causing panic, doing all of those things. So it's just like, for me, I would anchor one flank with a big unit of lead belchers, and the other side would have Mournfang.
Yeah, Mournfang is good.
And that way you can stay away from the monsters, because we all know how he, one lucky cannonball, your monster's gone, right?
Right, right. I mean, the Stonehenge, yeah. I mean, he's great, but one cannonball and you are in trouble. One of the things that I'll say about the Mournfang, the Retardo Cats, is that basically, you know, they are good, but they're so dependent on getting the charge. Just about anyone charging them is going to really hurt them. And if they get hit in the flank, they're in huge, huge trouble, just because there's not enough that they can do to kind of stay in it. Unless you are taking like a unit of 8 or something like that, which is just, that's a lot to try to cram in there. But really, you know, I think the Dragonhide Banner is a great choice on them. It really does work well with that particular unit. So I would say, yeah, you know what, you can definitely take them. I wouldn't say you're stupid to take them. I think you just need to be really, really ready to have them flop. And that's kind of why I say that the optimum unit size for them is 4. I wouldn't really put more points than that into them just because they are so dependent on the charge. And if you're not getting the charge, they will not make up their points. Outside of that, everything else is really kind of up in the air. You can take it, you cannot take it. I know a lot of kids out there are crazy for the Saber Cats. Oh, yeah, don't take Yetis. Yetis still suck balls. They're still one of the worst units in the game. They're fucking terrible. But Knoblars, let's talk about Knoblars. I feel like having Knoblars in big unit sizes is fine. I wouldn't personally take them, but they are great tar pits. Don't take banners on them unless you're trying to make up banners for Blood or Glory. But not that anybody uses that shit.
What do you mean, rulebook scenarios?
Oh my god, rulebook scenarios are fucking gay.
They break the game.
They break the game. Well, like, we're playing Battle for the Pass, and this is not a prime scenario for John's army. Like, it just isn't. It's he so has small. To cram everything in, right? What's nice said. About it for his army is that's what she said. Did you get that? That's what I did on the text message there,
yes.
Nathan, when I said I'm going down right now. I texted TWSS.
Oh,
anyways,
no, like I said, when I said ready, I turned my phone on airplane mode, so I'll get it once we're done podcasting,
and you will laugh. Oh man, you'll say that Lang.
Remember
that guy's a side splitter.
Remember
that. Oh god. But yes, Knoblars. I personally feel like having like two units of 10 with trappers in them is a great choice. They're still very cheap. They are awesome speed bumps for any horde-sized units where you're making the entire unit take difficult terrain tests. I mean, that's just fucking amazing. They are an excellent, excellent unit to have Whether you're using them as tar pits or you're taking a 10-man squad, I think you have to have at least one of those options. I think ignoring them all together is a huge mistake. They do add a lot to your army, and because, again, your army is so dependent on the charges or is so dependent on counter-charging, you can't really build that army without putting speed bumps in it. If you don't do that, you're just asking for trouble. But yeah, outside of that, like the Rhinox cannon and the scrap launcher is kind of a waste of points now. You know, the Stonehenge is really cool. I know people like the Yeti horn or whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah, Frost. That one's
sure, why not? That one's okay. I mean, I don't mind it, but it's pretty good. They're magic items. You know, we don't really talk a whole lot about magic items unless there's really something that stands out dramatically for us. For me, it's the Greedy Fist. I think you always need to try to fit at least one Greedy Fist into your list. For the points that you're paying, it's amazing. It's going to basically make any character that you have that much better. And the fact that every time you punch a wizard, he loses a magic level. You know, you don't even have to wound. It's just hit him.
And I was going to say, who does not like punching wizards?
Mm-hmm.
No, for me, if we do want
to
talk
play
about
bass
it
for punching wizards,
right?
Well, you probably never heard of them.
No, they're so underground.
Hey-o. For me, I think the Hellheart. The Hellheart is phenomenal. Like, I know we literally just talked about, you know, take a Slaughtermaster, you know, gear him up for whatever. I think the Hellheart is good enough to warrant a butcher. You know, you just take a fucking level one butcher or a Firebelly or something. You give him the Hellheart because, you know, once you get into combat and once everything's nearby, the all enemy wizards within D6 times 5 inches must take a fucking miscast. And, you know, you add a dispel dice for each wizard forced to roll. I mean, that's huge. I mean, even if the guy just has Teclis, you know, or something, you know, even if he only has one wizard, you're getting plus one dispel dice. Almost every miscast is robbing power dice. So I mean, for 50 points, you're essentially shutting down a magic phase with the chance of sniping an expensive wizard.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that the Hellheart is good to have. You know, I find that for the most part, you can get away with not having it. But I do agree with you there, Nathan. I mean, it is worth taking a butcher if you have the extra points, but points economy is always going to be troublesome with the ogres, because of the fact that everything costs 40 plus points. You can't really get away from that. So you are going to find yourself looking at a 50 point magic item and, you know, 100 and some point character to go with it. A bit of a daunting task. Now, you also have to remember that ogre butchers, even a butcher, is still essentially an Empire captain. You know, like, he's still a monster. He still has a stomp. He's still got a lot of wounds. He's still got high toughness. You know, he's got 3 attacks. You can give him a great weapon, which is great. Firebellies, take him, not take him. Like I said, I think everything else in this book outside of Yetis is, yeah, if you feel like it, go for it. I think the only one that you might want to avoid is all the special characters. And probably gorgers you'll want to avoid. There's always better points to be spent than what you would spend on gorgers, which I hate because I love my gorger model. I think they're a lot of fun. I just think that, yeah, you are kind of, you're wasting points. It's just, there's better points to be spent elsewhere in your list than spending it on a gorger.
Yeah, you know, and I think the only other advice I would give is if you are going to do an Ogre Kingdoms army, you know, you need to start with the core of characters. You know, start with your BSB, start with your Slaughtermaster. Yep. And, you know, make the decision at that point to say, am I going to take the Firebelly with Hellheart or another butcher for whatever reason?
Right.
Start there, you know, build in your core. And then once you've added everything that you want, because, you know, I do agree with Lang, there really are no terrible choices outside of Yeti. So take whatever you want. For me, though, I like Man-Eaters because they can really just kind of plug a hole. You know, whatever your list is missing, if you feel you need something that is super swell at dealing with artillery, you have scouting Man-Eaters with braces of handguns.
Yep.
You know, you so it's just like, I think that Man-Eaters are one of those no-brainer choices just because of how well you can sort of tailor them to literally plug any holes.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I mean, we could go on and on about the various builds for Man-Eaters.
And plugging holes.
Oh, God.
I'm going to plug John's hole here in about 40 minutes.
Oh, good Lord.
All right, so as we move on to the main topic of today's show, we realize that we don't necessarily have a main topic for today's show, do
we? You know,
we?
I was realizing that as we were talking about
We started talking about everything, and I was just like, we didn't decide.
No, we didn't.
For a road trip.
But let me throw this out there, because since we did the initial review of the Tomb Kings, I know that you, Nathan, have kind of changed directions on them. You were really happy with them. You thought that they were really competitive. And now you're kind of looking at them going, they're not as competitive as I thought they were. They're really not the way to... Obviously, the ETC still feels they're a pile of shit.
I still feel that the ETC is a pile of shit, so...
Well, let's
I
agree
guess
to
we're...
disagree when it comes to piles of shit. Let's do a bit of a Tomb King redux here.
Okay. You know? Sure, that sounds good. Okay, you know, I'm going to start, because I think what
that
it was...
That noise cues Lang refilling his glass.
That's... Ooh. Lang's going to feel bad in the morning. But no, I mean, you know, the thing is I think initially I was chomping at the bit to start a Tomb Kings army, and I think that has kind of died away. So now I'm looking at them a little more objectively. Do I feel that they are a bad army? No, I don't. In fact, they're still Robin Credace's best written codex, which, you know, surprising considering, you know.
I know you're trying. You are struggling.
I am trying
so hard right now.
I'm trying not to let this go into an Empire rant. I'm trying so hard.
This is going to be a fun episode next week.
Oh, yes. But no, I mean, like I said, I think they're a good book. I just think that they end up being predictable. You know, I know that even though Tomb King skeletons are cheap as borscht, I know that every Tomb King player is dumping a prince into them unless they're bowmen. You know, because it's just like, oh, you know what? Skeletons suck. You add in a prince with My Will Be Done, all of a sudden skeletons are okay. You know, so it's just like, it's just those really obvious combos that I think, you know, is my issue with the Tomb Kings. And really, other than that, that abomination of a chariot unit that we've talked John into, there's nothing in the book that scares me, you know, because toughness 8 monsters, they're neat. But, you know, they don't break the game, because at the end of the day, my units are used to wounding monsters on sixes, and all toughness 8 means is that my monsters wound their monsters on sixes, but I never want my monster fighting a monster.
Okay, like, but that's also the common misconception with Tomb King monsters, though, is this idea that they're supposed to be so much better than everyone else just because they have toughness 8. We talked about this when we talked about the book initially. They're no different from a Stegodon or a Hydra or any other monster mm-hmm. you put on the table. They just have a slightly different use in terms of what you use them for. I still feel that they are excellent flanking monsters. Like, my Stegodons can flank, but they actually excel if I'm going to put them into the front two at a time.
I'd say the better flanking, like, of the two is the Necrosphinx, because it can fly.
See, here's the thing. The Necro Sphinx is better at staying on a flank, but the yes. War Sphinx is going to be better every time, because,
you
know,
give it the breath weapon.
Well, yeah, you give it the breath weapon and you just Thunder Crush every single turn.
Yes.
You know, okay, you know, one out of two turns I do nothing, but from experience, your monster's bread and butter is coming from his Thunder Stomp. So who gives a fuck if his attack misses?
Yeah.
But no, I mean, like I said, it's just, I think that's the issue, is Tomb King monsters really need to be hunting other monsters. And I think that's why the Necro Sphinx is the more no-brainer choice, because with his Strength 10 Heroic Killing Blow attack, that's what he wants to be doing. He wants to go into a monster, because that's the only time where toughness 8 actually matters. But I think the biggest problem with War Sphinxes is a 5+ armor save. So, yep. You know, my strength 4 troops wound a toughness 6 Stegodon or a toughness 8, you know, War Sphinx on sixes. I don't care. It doesn't mean anything to me. But my strength 4 troop basically means that the Sphinx takes the wound. It's down to a 6+ save. At least the Stegodon still has a 50-50 chance of bouncing it.
On an ancient Steg.
Sorry?
On an ancient Steg.
Sure, Lizardmen suck. I don't care. I know one has a 3+, one has a 4+. I never remember which.
But at the same time, how much is a Necro Sphinx?
A Necro Sphinx
225.
225, right? That's still more expensive than a Stegodon. Or, I'm sorry, less expensive than a Stegodon. Stegodons are exceptionally expensive because of their impact hits.
Sure.
Right? So, and again, I always...
Sure, I mean, we can change this to a Stonehorn, which is, what, 225 as well?
Yes.
I mean, The point remains the same. I think that's the issue that I have with the Tomb Kings is they're kind of all over the place where you look at it and like I said, their skeletons are no brainers. You want to put a prince in them because otherwise they're just worthless skeletons. You know, the only thing that makes them better is my will be done. And even then, if you want to add in more points, throw in a necrotext because now with hatred, they're a little bit better. They're actually going to be, you know, as good as a fucking clan rat at killing something.
If you keep them close to your constructs, like the War Sphinx, then they get the War Sphinx gets regeneration.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I see what you're saying here, Nathan, and I don't disagree with you. I feel like, you know, this is one of those lists that very similar to vampire counts. And again, they're both undead. So let's, you know, like I'm not saying that it shouldn't be this way. But very similar to vampire counts, they are character dependent. You know, you do have to be putting those characters into units. You got to be making them, you know, fight the way they're supposed to fight. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are obvious combinations, but I think, you know, that's how it should be played. Like, that's the idea, is that there should be these specific obvious types mm-hmm. of combinations. You can play it other ways, but there is a clear path in the way that you play this list. Now, as we see with John's list here, that Abomination, as you said, sized chariot unit, is absolutely kind of the direction that a lot of people want to go with this, to kind of stray from the idea of playing a more vampire counts horde style undead list, which is a good thing. But I don't feel like you're really taking the whole list into account here, Nathan. You know, if your bias here for saying... bias. If your choice here for saying that the Tomb Kings aren't as happy with them as the fact that there's just too many obvious choices and you can never really build anything outside of that, you're still only talking about 30% of the army. You know what I mean?
Oh, you know, if definitely. You know, I see what you're saying. But I mean, well, mostly.
But if I were there, I would hit you again, Lang.
Look, I almost knocked a filling out last time. You know there's room for improvement.
That there is.
Doesn't even Poland have to smack a bitch?
smack a mouthy bitch, I think is what that's we right. said. You're bigger
no,
than
No, but
you.
I mean, you know, I think what it is
and
my
I'm not
biggest...
small.
No. You know, I think what my biggest issue is Tomb Kings now feel like Necrons from 3rd and 4th edition.
Hold on.
Let me finish this. As in, I always know where X number of points are being spent. And so when you look at it where it's just like, okay, I need 25% core. So, I mean, John's the only person I know that's just being like, oh yeah, 25% chariots. Oh, fuck yourself. You know, but everyone else is, you know, they're taking the skeleton archers, you know, 2 units of 20, 3 units of 20, you know, they're taking the big unit of hand weapon and shields or spears, depending on whether they actually think they can kill something.
So you're
or
upset
they
that it promotes a balanced list?
No,
heaven
I'm
forbid.
Saying...
Crudus doesn't write this kind of crap.
Yeah, that's right. No, like I said, my issue isn't that they're not competitive because you build a balanced list and it's going to do good things for you. My issue is, okay, 50% of my army is dictated for me. It's core and it's support for my core. So now, do I want to add in one big unit of Tomb Guard and call it a day? Do I want to add in constructs and call it a day? Or do I want to do, you know, and so
like
that
demons.
To me... Hey, demons are all core.
Wait a second.
Do I have a big unit of blood letters, or do I have a big special or rare? And at least I have four core choices that are different.
Painted different colors.
So I guess I could see why you don't like Tomb Kings as much because it's essentially your demon army.
Only a lot worse because demons break the game. You know, it's funny because when I started my demon army, just to go off topic, because hey.
Whatever.
No. It's Gamercast.
All right. You get one, Nathan.
All right, fine. Before I started my...
Can I talk about porn for a second?
Yeah, I was going to say, you had your porn correct.
Let me get down on you guys about incest.
I know a lot about that, too. No.
Do tell.
Awkward. Awkward. No, it's funny too because, like I said, I was live blogging it, so I was listening to it. I was just like, God, I have nothing to add about porn. And then you just kept going on about the incest and how it was a turn off and how you couldn't turn your brain off. And I was like, but you can watch Phantom Menace.
There's no incest in Phantom Menace. Jar Jar doesn't fuck his cousin at any point during Phantom Menace. Listen, if Phantom Menace involves enormous amounts of sex with between brothers and sisters,
okay,
like
back.
if when Amidala lost the will to live, whatever the fuck that meant, and she had her two babies, and they put them in a crib, and Luke and Leia started 69ing each other as infants, I would not be able to turn my brain off for that. But Jar Jar going, Misa so crazy, I can turn my brain off and watch my son laugh and say, yes, that's entertaining. There's no incest in Clone Wars.
But isn't it like incest when George Lucas literally fucks something that he created?
That's masturbation.
Oh, yeah, hey, you're right. But
it's like the whole conversation of, like, if you cloned yourself and mouth fucked your clone, is that incest or masturbation?
Oh, it's totally
masturbation.
I mean, how could it be incest? It's you.
Seriously, would you not mouth fuck yourself, John? Come on, don't even act like you wouldn't.
No.
You have a beard. We know you would mouth fuck yourself. People with beards are telling the world that there is an oral fixation happening, and if only somebody looked enough like them. Nathan, get back on topic, because this is just getting out of hand. Demons.
Okay. I was just going to say that before I started the army, I was totally in denial, where I was just like, no, 8th edition did a lot of balancing work. They're totally not broken. And then I played the demon army, and I was just like, no, they're broken as shit. So that's why I was saying it's not the same, because Tomb Kings aren't broken as shit.
All right,
I
mean, fair enough.
If Tomb Kings were to lose 25% of their army to a miscast on the top of turn one, the rest of that 75% of that Tomb King army is fucked. My demons have proven they'll just win a game anyway, because fuck them.
Pretty much.
But no, like I said, I don't know. My thing with Tomb Kings, you know, to go to the positives, I do love the models. I do love that you can build a very, very balanced list with
It promotes a balanced list.
It really does. You know, and really, I think that that my only complaints are kind of that little blandness factor. So, I mean, unlike the ETC that says that they're still garbage and here have more points, I don't think that. I think that a good Tomb King army is going to be competitive. And I think a good Tomb King player with a good Tomb King army is always going to be fucking dangerous to play. And it's never going to be a good matchup, because every undead army is always a hard matchup.
Well, I'm not looking at this list going, oh, yeah, this is a breeze. Like, I helped you build it. That's what worries me about this list, is I know what your plan is, and I know that that's going to be tough for me. But yeah, you know what? I agree with you there, Nathan. I think even the idea of giving them more points is such a joke, because you're going to give me an extra 200 points. What am I going to do? I'm going to buy a second War Sphinx. Yay, War Sphinx!
I'm going to put another rank of cherries.
Do you have any idea what an extra monster does to a list?
I wasn't talking before you talked.
Nah, I know. I was trying to think of something witty to say when we came back, but there was nothing. Just nothing. Nothing happened there. Anyways. Wow.
Look, John, Lang is having an off day. This doesn't happen often, but he's defenseless. Just rip in.
if you can get your hand on his jugular, tear that bitch out. Blood everywhere. It adds character to your army. Yes, we're back. We are back. I might even cut some music into the separation on that one. We'll see what happens. Dun, 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 dun. You know, we'll see what happens, right? Intermission is what we like to call that one.
Snack bar.
Lang needed more scotch. All right, so let's get back to Tomb Kings. Fuck whatever tangent we were on at that particular point. John.
Adding an extra monster to an army.
John, let's talk. I said fuck it. Why would you bring it back up?
I'm sorry.
God damn it. You just make everything bad.
I know. Look, and it felt like a math problem. Had to answer.
He's like, oh my god, it's like algebra. Okay, so John, talk a little bit about your views on this army, kind of compared to your chaos and the experiences that you've had with it. I don't know how much you've had with it so far, but do you really feel like it as you built it and as you were working with it, that it was feeling like it was underpowered?
Well, going from Cornate Chaos, which basically just run at people and hope for the best, you really have to hold back sometimes. Like, you can't just rush people because you're going to get, well, punched in the face, especially when your skeletons just aren't as strong. But, well, unless they have a
Keep talking. Okay. I don't know if it's going to cut out again.
Okay. I added the chariot unit because every game that I've used them, I had a small... it was a smaller unit of just six, and they performed well every time. I was just like, well, what's going to make them better? Let's just make the unit bigger. So, unit of 12 chariots, which is the abomination these guys have been talking about. Being that they're core, you add a king in. If they hit a unit, it's going to go straight through it most of the time.
Yep.
Especially, like, I noticed one... when I only had six and I hit one of the greater demons that Nathan had. Because most of my experience has been from playing demons. I have no idea what it's like to play an army that has to roll morale checks.
We need to play in a tournament.
And it's not just my demon.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, you know, I keep running into that thing. Like, I've been building it so that, you know, it affects morale more, or leadership more. Taking the golden mask of Kehet, right? So you... every unit within 6 inches has to use their base leadership. You don't get any rerolls. You don't get your BSB rerolls. It's dangerous when you hit somebody, especially when the unit causes terror.
And fuck you, Skaven.
Yeah. And fuck you, Skaven. I think that that's actually something that we can all take away from this conversation. but no, I agree. I do agree with you there. I feel like their magic, you know, is a bit strange just to the fact that it's not as potent as a lot of other armies have had.
It's true, but a lot of it is just
the augments are great.
The augments are great, but you need to roll for the augments. And it's like I told Lang earlier, I've rolled on a level 4, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and you're just like, well...
I have no augments. Other than my signature.
Signature.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? You're always going to kind of have those problems. And we talked about this when the book came out, that is kind of what sets them apart from vampire counts, is that their resummoning is not quite as dependable as it is in vampire counts. Again, this was before the new vampire counts book was released as well. Okay, so... what for you, John, really stands out as the unit that you feel performs the best? And the reason why I want to talk about this is, you know, I think every army, you can always point out one or two units that are kind of no-brainers. They always perform. They always kind of make up their points. But the thing with undead and being an undead player, and I think anyone who plays a horde knows this, when you play an army that is built up of not good shit, in high quantities, you do realize that kind of, you know, on average, they'll perform the way you want them to about 70% of the time. And the rest of the time, they're just never going to really do what you need them to do because they're just not good, right? You're trying to hedge your bets with numbers, but stats are always going to kind of be king in a lot of places. So that when, you know, a unit of Chaos Chosen come up against your skeletons, yeah, they look like pieces of shit. You know, when a Bloodthirster comes at my unit of Saurus Warriors, they feel like pieces of shit. But Saurus Warriors are great. They're a great unit. Mm-hmm. They're a fantastic unit. Mm-hmm. Against most stuff, they perform well. And I feel like that's always kind of what bogs down armies like Vampires and Tomb Kings and other Horde-type armies or kind of shitty soldier-type armies is this idea that they always feel like shit. And I think that that's what always kind of throws them off the end. Because even if you look at ETC, and I'm going to exclude Orc and Goblins here because it's clear that they play those.
It's abundantly clear.
Abundantly clear. The ETC looks at Horde armies kind of in a weird way, where they look at it and they're just like, oh, they're overpowered, they're so crazy, they're so this and that, because you can hedge your bets in those ways, mm-hmm. right? But then there are other Horde armies that they kind of look at those and they say, like, ah, they suck. Well, yeah, why would you take them?
Exactly. Like, they look at the Tomb Kings and they're like that. But, I mean, my plan is, like, chariots are a core, right? So they always perform well for me. That's why I took, like, a big unit of them, just to smash into things with them.
Okay, John, what are your thoughts on Tomb Guard? Because I know a lot of Tomb King players online swear by them, or they're just like, oh yeah, you just take, like, a unit of 30, and then you put in the King and the Prince, and or not the Prince, but the Necrotect and the Cryptech, and then, yeah, you know, they're amazing.
Too, right?
Yeah, but what do you
hey,
think?
Hey, fuck that. That's Credace's fault.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay?
No.
Oh, that was Matt Ward.
That was Matt Ward.
Yeah, Matt Ward's
fault. Okay, we all know that Matt Ward can't get past his fetishes, okay? That was his Egyptian fetish. There's only so many Egyptian terms you can draw from that are cool sounding.
I was surprised that instead of Codex Necrons, he didn't take that Egyptian fetish and just make Codex Thousand Sons. Because we all know he only likes writing Marines.
Clearly. Oh, Lord.
Well, no, Tomb Guard, I like them. Like, I mean, they're a solid unit, but I mean, if they aren't everybody wants to put that Necrotech, the king in there, and have the unit hit as hard as what they want it to, because they want that a chaos, like, you know, like, it's not going to do anything near what, like, a Warriors of Chaos unit's going to do. So, and it's, like, the special choice, and you know, it's got Killing Blow. That's its whole thing.
Okay, but that comes back to my question. You feel like Chariots are the go-to?
I think Chariots
are more the go-to. As opposed to
Tomb Guard? Before Tomb Guard,
yes. Yeah, because, I mean, what you're talking about there, Nathan, to me, it, like, that's one of those things that's just such a prime target in a list like this. You know, I'll hit that unit so fucking hard, I don't care how big it is or what you put in it, I'll hit it so fucking hard there is nothing left but ash by the time I'm done. And you put so much into it that it just, it's going to fall flat on its face.
Oh, yeah, look, my horde of 40 bloodletters love seeing it because line up across from my bloodletters, and I know I'll win 100% of those matchups. So it's just like, you know, I'm totally right there with you because I know that I can hit it so fucking hard that there's less than five guys left by the end of one round of combat.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, but again, a unit of 12 chariots hits.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about their magic phase a little bit more here, because I did touch on that earlier, kind of saying that their magic is a little bit muted compared to other armies that have come out in 8th edition. I feel like that's actually, it was very much done on purpose in the sense that they shouldn't be as magic heavy as vampires. You know, they really do want to set themselves apart from vampires, and so the magic part of this list is, you're not really supposed to depend on the fact that you're re-raising guys. The fact that you're re-raising guys is just kind of a bonus.
No, it's meant to level the playing field for your Tomb Kings. Like, say, all of the first three augments are really good for making your guys more survivable, stronger, or, like, you know, just more attacks. The other three are hexes. Well, apart from the one big useless spell, the Skullstorm or whatever.
Hey,
okay. You know, the one you always listen for your signature.
Skullstorm is the same as the Firestorm from Lore of Fire, level 6, and yeah, it really is fucking useless.
That's what I mean, but the other two are hexes. It's like the Tomb King magic is all about leveling the playing field, because the one lowers the weapon skill and strength, the other lowers toughness and strength. I believe so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind the Skull Storm, but again, that's only if you're taking the Lich Priest with the Shadow Cloak, the one that you get to fly over units and it does damage.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly, right? You read my blog. But anyways, like, it's, you know, like, as far as I'm concerned, like, if you roll it up, that's the only time it ain't so bad. Is when you can be behind a unit or right on a unit's flank and just hit them point blank with that shit because you don't have any other augments to cast that turn. I feel like that's really a late game spell to kind of mop units up or take out that unit that really hasn't seen combat yet that you've been trying to avoid all game. I feel like that's kind of a nice thing to have. But for the most part, you know, I think everyone can agree that you'd swap it for any of the 8 lores in the rule book. Because even, you know, the you know, like, if you can give Lore of Light to this army, you can do some of the other stuff.
Well, you can, but you need your
extra stuff.
You know, honestly, I actually disagree. I think Lore of Nehekara is fantastic, but I think the big thing this is something that you mentioned on Higher Learning for Beastmen, and it's really stuck with me because I think it's a great idea. And that is, you take 2 level 4s because it gives you Lore Master, yep, and it gives you double signature spells.
Yep.
And when I look at Tomb Kings, I think there is no better army for doing that, you know, because getting Lore Master Nehekara, you can either take a special character, you can do the double, you know, level 4s. Mm-hmm. You know, but at least that way, you know, John, you don't have the problems of missing your augments because, again, you have Lore Master. You know every single fucking spell. And the thing with Tomb King magic is it has to be relentless. You know, it has to be that thing where you're just like, no, I'm going to cast Move on the Bubble. No, didn't go off. Okay, this guy's going to cast Move on the Bubble. Okay, now we're going to go with this. You know, and it's all about, you know, you cast 2 or 3 spells a turn because that's 2d6 or 3d6 back into every unit affected in the bubble. So it's all about staying tight and that just being relentless, because I think that, you know, for again, as I said on the Tomb King episode, you know, the Tyranid Codex is forgiven. Robin Credace did a bang up job on nailing that feel for the Tomb Kings. It's just like, you know, they are relentless. You know, it's just like they're just going to keep coming. They're just going to keep doing what they're doing. And that is the end of it. So for me, like I said, when I look at things like that, that's when I look at it and I'm just like, you know, Tomb Kings, because you need your augments, and you need your augments.
You
it's the only way for you to get models back in your units.
Well, it's not only that, but you need the augments to make your units good enough to start chewing through people. Like, you know, the multi-shot, the 5-plus ward save for the earlier part of the game, you know, to keep your guys survivable so you can get across. Like, I mean, I always try to get the 5-plus ward save because that's all I need is a cannonball through my chariot unit.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, you know, that's the thing is I think that if I was going to build a Tomb King list, I would start with 2 level 4s, because that way you're guaranteed to get your augments. You might even be lucky enough to split them around to 2 wizards. Obviously, one is your Hierophant. So, I mean, you know, if he dies, shit, buy him a ward save, you know, things like that. But it's just like, start with your 2 level 4s. You know, I don't think you need a BSB unless you're playing Construct Heavy. And I'm going to put that caveat out there, is if you're going to play a heavy Conscript list with a lot of Snake Riders and do Shabti and things of that nature, then,
let's move on to the stupidity check. Okay, so listen, let's wrap up Tomb Kings quickly before I get into the stupidity check for this week. Provided by Mr. Adam Tremblay, who has his Warren Moore podcast out there as well. If you want to listen to that, it is on Facebook. But, you know, Tomb Kings in general, I really don't feel like they deserve the bad rap that they're getting right now. I feel like, as Nathan said, there are a lot of obvious choices, but I feel like the way that you build around that with the remaining kind of 60% of your list is really what makes it win or lose. And I feel like you're going to feel very comfortable in this list at any points cost. I do agree with Nathan, particularly on the idea of having multiple Lich Priests if you really, really want to have that lore to depend on it. It's kind of funny because I looked at the Tomb Kings for a while now and have looked at them with this perspective of just kind of avoid their magic. It's there, it's a support, it's whatever. Give your wizard that black darkness cloak just so that your wizard can kind of do some shit other than like failing to cast spells. I feel like the only problem with taking the 2 level 4s is you're always kind of stuck in that position of worrying about having to deal with not having good magic phases. You know, I mean, that's a whole other conversation about magic to begin with. A level 4 is a must, as I think we all can agree. But, you know, I would like to see kind of a little bit more play come out of Tomb Kings, because I feel like a lot of Tomb Kings that we're seeing right now is all Theory Hammer. You know, I don't feel like there's enough people out there playing them. I'm not seeing them enough at tournaments. I'm not seeing enough people really building these lists and getting out there and playing them. I feel like it's a lot of proxy math hammering, saying like, oh, no, it's actually not good. And then trying to tell people, oh, no, it's not good, you know, as opposed to people actually playing these lists. Because I know the list that you put together there, Nathan, a while ago, you had put like 2 different lists together. Great. They were great lists. Like, they would have been really competitive, you know, like really strong lists. But again, it's like you never played them, so it's all Theory Hammer. So, you know, in general, I think that the Tomb Kings, you know, are definitely still good. I wouldn't call them the first fail for 8th edition. We'll see what happens with Empire next week.
I was going to say, hey, I mean, next week we've got something coming.
I don't know. I haven't read it yet. We'll see what happens.
No, hey, you know what? Spoilers. I don't think it's a fail. I just think it's poor Empire players. You've been crud-aced. that's all I got to say.
There you go. All right, so let's move on to the stupidity check of this week. Surprise, surprise, Games Workshop comes in at the top of the list once again with their Box O'Vultans. That's right, everybody. If you've got $80 to spend,
I didn't even look at the price.
You can get a box of 3 models. That's right, 3 fine-cast Vultans. You can get old-ass Vultan, you can get kind of old-ass Vultan, and you can get Kevin Sorbo Vultan in a box as fine cast. I think the best part about this, pointed out by Adam when he sent this to me, is at the very bottom of the description there. I'll let you read that there, Nathan, just so you can get a kick out of it. It's while no longer. It's the second paragraph.
While no longer a living member of the Empire, you can always use the Vultan miniatures as a characterful alternative to your captain or general of the Empire.
So even though we don't have special rules for this bitch anymore, you should totally buy this box, because it's like 3 characters.
And look how awesome. I mean, that guy in the, you know, Kevin Sorbo, who's not wearing any armor, that's an awesome general, you know, because we all know that Empire generals and characters don't wear armor at all.
You could get away with using him as a warrior priest.
You could if you wanted to. No, like I said, don't get me wrong. You could proxy, but that's the thing, is like, the Vaultan models were never great. I mean, Kevin Sorbo was the best one, and...
Kevin Sorbo is the best one. The one on the horse is fine, but like, it's a weird cast. Sorry,
the old one on the horse is stupid with his stupid pose and his stupid ethylene.
Oh, where he's giving you the secret middle finger.
Dude, it totally looks like he's reading notes off of his hand. It's like he's trying to give the rallying.
No. He's telling Chaos to in the pink. That's all he's telling him.
All I'm seeing is stop hammer time.
Well, no, you see right there. Yeah, stop hammer time. But you see the guy on the left there, okay? Him? He's thrown up this, which is supposed to be the double tail of the comet.
Uh-oh.
But it's just a gang sign. Like, that's all it is. He's just like, Chaos, two in the pink.
Or if you're in Europe.
I would love to just model that with a pinky out, just so that we could call him the Shocker.
Vaultan metal.
Ah, but you know what? I mean, this is typical Games Workshop. I mean, on the same page, they've got the Warrior Priest, which looks great, but it's just like, why can't you just let it go? Like, if you really didn't feel like Vaultan had any place in the game anymore, and you didn't want to put special rules for him anymore, why are you trying to sell this model? You know, like, why are you... Yeah, it's the box of Aragorns for fantasy. That's really all it is.
I'm just waiting for the box of Marinus Caligars.
A box of Marinus Caligars? Yeah, why the fuck not? Oh, God.
It's coming.
I'm sure it is. Until fucking Matt Ward gets his hands on the Ultramarines in the next edition. I'm not reloading. No, that's just Nathan. Yeah.
I mean, it's like... It's too
I just started to laugh. Mr. Roboto, for helping me escape. Thank you. Yeah, apparently Skype... If anybody's noticed this right now, Skype is now trying to sell you Skype Pro. And one of the things that they do to try to promote Skype Pro is they will say, you'll get a better connection with higher bandwidth. So now that they're trying to sell Skype Pro, they're throttling down the rest of the bandwidth on normal fucking calls. I have a full connection symbol, no problem whatsoever, but randomly the connection is dropping. And I know Nathan has a good connection too. But anyways, since Nathan, I think all we're going to get is Domo Arigato from you. That's Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm drawing Boy into Long.